You're with us for The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just ahead, we find out the status of COVID vaccines for loved ones and staff at hard-hit nursing homes. But first, it's Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Brad Kohlberg with a story about someone who saved a life by doing his job.
When we're at work, we all have a number of roles. We can take on other jobs, wear several hats. Albert Watson is a detention officer at the Dane County Juvenile Detention Center, where he also hosts a cooking club. Here, he tells the story of the day he saved a life by taking a bit of his own advice.
I had 10 minutes left of my shift before it was time to go home. I was headed to the control room to relinquish my equipment when the timer went off. I informed my coworker, Walter, that I'd head back to the pod to check on the male youth. See, every 25 minutes, our policy is to check on every kid that's in their room. This was the kid whose mood seemed to change as the day went on. It seemed like the more people he talked to, whether it be his social worker, public defender, the police, the more emotional he became. I've been a detention officer for almost 10 years at the Dane County Juvenile Detention Center. I've been training for a lead worker position and recently became the president of the Wisconsin Juvenile Detention Association. For the past 5 years, I've facilitated a cooking group at detention. No, I have not been to culinary school. My passion for cooking started with my dad. I'm the oldest of four boys, and my dad would get us up at 6:30 a.m. just so we could eat breakfast, consisting of sausage, salt pork, homemade biscuits, eggs, and tomato gravy. Yeah, I'm country than the sugar sandwich. My dad could take some neck bones and barbecue them in the oven and make us licking our fingers shortly after engaging that dish. So when I cook with these kids, it's from the heart and with love. We made many dishes over the last 5 years, from deep-fried Twinkies and Oreos to fried chicken and waffles. We've done homemade meatloaf, five cheese macaroni, lasagna and homemade garlic bread, patty melts, paninis. We always like to celebrate other cultures. So during the month of March, giving respect to the Irish, we did corned beef and cabbage, shamrock shakes and bangers and mash, which isn't really an Irish dish, but was one of the recipes that popped up when I Googled Irish dishes. And I can't forget the Kool-Aid. Kool-Aid is special when you're locked up. I bet y'all wondering, what do the kids get when they don't earn the lunch? They get hot dogs. Hot dogs I boil for about 4 hours. All I do is keep adding water to them. These turkey franks go from looking light brown color to this pale off-white spongy Vienna sausage frank. I once added green food coloring on St. Patrick's Day. I'm a damn fool at work. Some people think it's mean or cruel. I call it get your together. I can't reward negative behavior. You can't disrespect staff or be verbally abusive and earn the lunch. You can't steal a car on Wednesday night, get locked up, and earn the special lunch on Thursday. We'll shoot for next Thursday. The point I'm trying to make is, do your job. A kid that's incarcerated has only one job, and that's to follow the program so you can get the hell up out of detention. As I entered B-Pod, I walked to a room, B3. As I opened a small window of B3, I wasn't sure if what I was seeing was real, but it was. The male youth was hanging from the side of his toilet sink. I radioed for staff to call 911 and ask for assistance in B-Pod. I then opened the door of B3 and entered. Walter had just arrived. I instructed Walter to open the first aid drawer and grab the scissors from the first aid kit. You know, once I had the scissors in my hand, I began cutting the part of the sheet that was wrapped around this kid's neck. The kid let out this grunt of a sound, which let me know that he just might be okay. I gently placed this kid on the floor and wrapped several blankets on him to make him as comfortable as I could. Continue to talk to him and assure him that he was going to be okay. The point I'm trying to make is that I was doing my job that day. That timer went off after 25 minutes and that kid needed to be checked. A good thing happened from doing my job, and that's what I try to teach these kids during their short stay, the Dane County Juvenile Detention Center.
Albert Watson's story came to us from the podcast Inside Stories, which features Madison storytellers and digs deeper into their lives. He's a detention officer at the Dane County Juvenile Detention Center and just finished his term as president of the Wisconsin Juvenile Detention Association. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
And now we check in on Wisconsin nursing homes battling the pandemic. Thousands of long-term care facility residents and staff have received a COVID vaccine in recent days. Has your loved one? Join in 800-642-1234. Stephanie Shadid is president and CEO of Luther Manor. It's a nonprofit Christian senior community in Wauwatosa. Stephanie, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
We also have John Sauer with us, CEO of Leading Age Wisconsin. It's an advocacy organization, has 200 nonprofit member organizations, including nursing homes, assisted living, and independent facilities. John, welcome back to you.
Thank you, Kate. Good to be here.
Well, John, bring us up to speed here. The state allocated roughly 57,000 doses for long-term care facilities. What is the status of these doses?
Well, I think it's been somewhat impressive in where we have come as a country and a state, because we are using the Moderna vaccine in long-term care. That's been the vaccine that's been designated to be available to long-term care facilities, including nursing facilities and assisted living facilities. And the federal approval of Moderna happened around December 18th, final approval on the 20th, and 8 days later, we were putting shots in the arms of nursing home residents and staff. That first happened on December 28th. That first week of the vaccine program, which is called the Federal Pharmacy Partnership Program for Long-Term Care. So there are two separate programs, but for long-term care, the partnership program is how nursing homes and assisted living will receive the vaccines directly from Walgreens and CVS. We had 39 facilities vaccinated last week, and the Department of Health Services tells us that by Monday of next week, we hope to have about half of the nursing homes be visited by the two institutional pharmacies. So by Monday, we should be halfway there with the nursing facilities. And the institutional pharmacies tell us that by January 25th at the latest, they hope to have visited all 360 nursing homes.
Okay, so it's really in these next few crucial weeks that we're going to see, a real surge in residents and staff getting this vaccine.
That is what we're hoping, praying for, and anticipate will happen. And I do think having 39 facilities be visited in a kind of an interrupted week with New Year's Eve and New Year's Day and just the, beginning to kind of learn how to do this, because it hasn't been done at this level of this scale before.
Logistics. Logistics matter.
Some progress. Right. Exactly.
Stephanie, bring us up to speed what Luther Manor is receiving in terms of vaccines.
You bet. So yesterday we held our first clinic. We're very excited. In fact, John laid out a terrific timeline, and I guess I really have to reinforce for listeners how quickly this has come into our facility. Yesterday it was actually a week sooner than we were originally told. So we began planning as soon as we knew that the Pfizer vaccine was approved, and at that time not entirely sure which we would be getting. So we began our planning and logistics and thinking through things as much as we could. There was very little information, but having gone through testing for COVID, we knew that things would probably be bumpy, right? Things would probably be uncertain. We would probably get a lot of information at the very last minute. And then in this case with the vaccine, we also needed to do a lot of educating of staff, of residents, of family members to make sure that they had everything they needed to be comfortable with the decision when the vaccine eventually did reach our campus, which was yesterday.
Yeah, Stephanie, how are loved ones, family members consulted or apprised of the status of their nursing home residents getting the vaccine? How can they ensure that the loved one is getting it?
Sure. We have had conversations with every family member. Some of our residents are their own person, as we deem it and call it in the industry. So we've had conversations with them. Certainly, we provide them with all of the detailed information. Moderna has put together a very, very comprehensive, I'll call it a Q&A, but information sheet that is provided to every resident or family member. We've spent a lot of time answering questions, addressing concerns and fears. There's been so much in different areas. You can either watch the news or go on the internet and find anything that will suit your own concern. And we've spent a lot of time trying to help people understand what we believe is the facts and data behind the vaccine and the science behind it. But ultimately, they're all free to make their own choice. So we've spent a lot of time trying to reassure folks that whatever their decision, we are caring for their loved one. Their loved one will be, if they choose to get the vaccine, we will make sure that it is, safe with their physician, number one, that they're comfortable getting it, number two, and that we observe them for a period of time afterwards to ensure there's no adverse effects.
What do you think your uptake will be? Do you have any idea on the percentage of your residents and staff who will get the vaccine?
Yeah, so in this first clinic, we had been successful in reaching more than probably 60% of our staff. The vaccine is not available to anyone under 18, and we have a number of students and younger folks that work for us, and especially in our dining areas. So removing them and some of our staff that work on a very, very temporary basis or part-time basis with us, we are easily in the 60% range, which I think was a terrific success given how quickly we had to deploy this.
Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of third shift staff, as an example, or other folks who didn't work yesterday who just were not able to get here either. So that was, I think, a big success. We're looking forward to our second clinic in early February when all of the folks from yesterday will receive their second dose. And then we're hoping that the staff members who were reluctant to get it in the first round step forward and make sure that they get vaccinated as well.
And that they can get their first dose then on that date in February?
That's right.
Okay.
And then
there
will be a third clinic in March to ensure that they get their second dose. And honestly, that's about 3 months away from now. So things might change. Maybe we'll have even more opportunities to have clinics so that we can get our assisted living residents vaccinated, and we can start to deploy it sooner to our independent living residents who are all in that age 65 and older band.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
John, what can you tell us about vaccines for people who are in the assisted living or in independent facilities?
We've been meeting with the vaccinators, Walgreens and CVS, and state DHS, Department of Health Services officials. Again, we met with them just late yesterday. The system that the federal government has set up requires a two-week notice before we go on to the next phase. I'm hoping that we might have that notification happen as early as Monday. One of the issues is we have to have sufficient inventory before we, as everyone's been calling it, press the button to say we're going to signal the start of finding doses for 140 people in assisted living. That would be residents and staff. So that is a tall order. But what we have to do is we have to have sufficient inventory of the vaccine so that when we deploy people out to over 5,000 facilities, that we have the inventory to draw from so that we can show up with a sufficient number of vaccines.
Sufficient doses. Yeah. John Sauer, CEO of Leading Age Wisconsin. We have Stephanie Shadid, President and CEO of Luther Manor in Wauwatosa. Do you work in a nursing home that is maybe understaffed due to COVID quarantines? How are you coping with the shortage? What challenges do you face as you care for a vulnerable population? Has your loved one been in a nursing home with a COVID outbreak? How is that situation? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about vaccine rollout. Residents of nursing homes and other long-term care facilities represent 27% of deaths from COVID in Wisconsin. That is the latest from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Do you work at a long-term care facility? Have you been vaccinated? What can you tell us about the status of your residents? 800-642-1234. John Sauer is CEO of Leading Age Wisconsin. Stephanie Shadid is here. She's CEO of Luther Manor in Wauwatosa. They're with us for 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Barb now in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Barb.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling about the lack of an emergency response to get into, to get the vaccine into a facility that is now having an outbreak of COVID. This is happening here in Chippewa Falls at the Wisconsin Veterans Home, and they do not are not scheduled to get the vaccine until January 15th. And in the last week, they have had 11 residents come down with COVID and four staff.
Yeah.
And the facility has asked for an earlier date by CVS, but has been denied that.
Okay, and so Barb wondering about the an ongoing outbreak, what does that mean for getting vaccines into nursing homes that is dealing with an outbreak? John, go ahead.
Well, I think a couple of things are probably in the works. I would suspect that the Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs is having conversations with the Department of Health Services about what happens in an outbreak. But I have to say, COVID is everywhere in the state of Wisconsin, and we've had an unbelievable surge happening in throughout the state. And when it happens like that, it's also happening in long-term care. I have to just say there are 300-plus active investigations in nursing homes right now that have at least one case of COVID. Now, it might be staff, it might be residents, but that's what we're dealing with, and that's why we have to get the vaccines out to people as quickly as possible. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, perhaps there's some way to move the date up. But I can tell you that, and I wish I didn't have to tell you this, that it's not an isolated situation where a nursing home has an outbreak. That has happened in the state of Wisconsin. And our data would show that Wisconsin nursing homes are doing better than, far better than the national average. Our death rate is far below the national average. But that doesn't mean it's we're in a comfort zone by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. So I can't say that the Veterans Home, as it's been reported here, is alone in combating an outbreak. And I wish that was not the case.
Barb, we appreciate your call. Stephanie, what can you share about Luther Manor and how you handle outbreaks?
Sure. We were actually handling it over the weekend. As John said, that we are amongst pretty much every facility in the state that are experiencing additional staff cases. As soon as we have any indication, we've been testing staff twice a week, so as soon as we get a test back or a staff member has any type of symptom, they stay away. We keep them at home. We ask them to stay home. And then we immediately begin isolating the unit and quarantining the unit. All of our staff are wearing full PPE. That means a face shield and a mask and gloves when appropriate and gowns. And cleaning has just become more than a full-time job for us. So making sure that we isolate the individual that has tested positive, we then test residents every 72 hours, sometimes every 48 hours, to make sure that they are safe. When we do have a resident that is positive, we move them to our COVID specialty unit that we have in our short-term rehabilitation area. And that unit helps to continue to, number one, isolate the virus, because so those residents don't spread it to others, staff members or residents. Mm-hmm. But it also allows us to treat them for specific conditions that we have seen that come from COVID to make sure they get the best care possible.
Yeah, and so you have to act very quickly, I'm sure, with, you know, making sure that you isolate it right away.
Absolutely. That's imperative.
Let's bring in Pam now in Green Bay. Pam, hi.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling to ask, are group homes considered to be assisted living or long-term care? Because generally they are, but they're a lot smaller than a regular nursing home. I have a son in a group home in Green Bay. They just had their first case test positive within the last few days. And so I'm concerned about, is this group home group to be included with the long-term care?
John, can you field that?
Generally speaking, group homes will be if they are licensed as adult family homes. So these are smaller facilities of four units or perhaps larger. But under adult family homes, they are included in the definition of assisted living. So they're within the 70,000 residents in the state that are targeted for that second rollout for assisted living. So I'm hoping your group home is licensed as adult family home, and if so, it will be included.
Pam, we appreciate the call. Stephanie, your residents haven't had visitors in since March, and you know that alone is just gut-wrenching. It just brings tears to my eyes. How are you dealing with the separation pain that families are feeling?
Yeah, sure. It's been a challenge for sure, and our staff have really stepped up to replace families as much as we possibly can, but we know there's really no replacement for a loved one. We actually have had visitors on our campus, so I want to make sure that that's known. In our independent living, our assisted living, and our skilled nursing, we have done in-person visits when it was safe to do and when the resident was in the condition that it was allowed. We screen everyone that comes in. There are lots of protocols on making sure that the person coming into the facility is well, that they don't have a pending case, a pending test outstanding, and then we do a good deal of high touch cleaning. But that is not the norm. And as soon as we have a case in the building, we do have to quarantine the unit, and those visits stop. So it's been a challenge, but we have done as much as we possibly can to use other new technologies, and we were able to receive a grant from the state of Wisconsin to assist in buying iPads, which has really helped in doing both visits with families, but also visits with physicians to make sure that they stay connected there as well.
Well, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Stephanie Shadid, CEO of Luther Manor, a senior community in Wauwatosa. And we had John Sauer, CEO of Leading Age Wisconsin, an advocacy organization. Just ahead, can emerging carbon capture technologies be developed soon enough to scrub greenhouse gas emissions from the atmosphere and avoid catastrophic climate change? We tackle that question with you on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to The Ideas Network.